Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Did you hear the nonsense that was happening in this studio last night? I wasn't here, but Mike Myers was. He was co-hosting the show with his brother, the writer and musician Paul Myers, and Mike Myers was speculating on where exactly I was.
He is in Kuala Lumpur.
That's right.
He was also in...
He was the station...
He was in the Transvaal for a while.
He's in the Transvaal. Well, he was the bureau chief for the CIA, wasn't he?
He is in the CIA, and so we're really not...
Have we blown his cover?
Blown his cover.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, he should have just given us the money.
Yes.
Because we told him.
Us the money.
I was going to write an op-ed about him for the New York Times exposing him.
But it is the perfect cover.
It is the perfect cover.
You know, travels the world.
That's right.
It really should be called Security Check.
Sounds like something out of one of his Austin Powers movies. So I would just like to, for the record, categorically deny any suggestion that I was involved in any form of covert intelligence operation, either here or abroad. You want to know where I was? Where I was. Because I can tell you where I was. Oh, I'll tell you. I'll tell you where I was. Why should I tell you where I was?
When I went up to San
All right, yes, I went up to Saratoga, again, just like it says in this old Carly Simon song. And actually, several of the horses I bet on won. There, see? No underworld spying or anything like that. Just some harmless fun.
You're with some underworld spy all the way.
So, I'm glad I've had a chance to clear that up. And if you missed Mike Myers and Paul Myers hosting Soundcheck last night, don't worry. You can hear it online at soundcheck.org. And you should definitely check it out because, after all, they may never be invited back.
The wind is howling like this swirling storm inside.
Broadway fans have followed Idina Menzel for years. She originated the role of Maureen in Rent, and the Green Witch, Elphaba, in the musical Wicked. But the Tony Award-winning actress became a household name after voicing Queen Elsa in the 2013 Disney film Frozen and singing the top 10 hit song Let It Go.
Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go.
Now, Idina Menzel is back on Broadway in the musical If Then. And today, Idina Menzel, along with composer Tom Kitt, are here with me in the Soundcheck studio. And they're going to start us off by performing a live version of the song You Learn to Live Without. It's from the musical If Then, and it's a live performance on Soundcheck.
Take your coffee black. You learn to drink your whiskey neat. You learn to take the shower cold and sleep on tired feet. You learn to order dinner in. You learn to send the laundry out. You learn how to amuse yourself. You learn to sleep alone. You learn to silence ticking clocks. You learn like to scream and shout. You learn to stop and breathe and smile. You learn to live without. You find the cold and tie you thought you'd given to goodwill. He tossed his favorite shoes onto the pile. Tears, and not to count the deadly days as they fade into years. You learn to stand alone at last, so brave and bold and strong and stout. You learn somehow to like the dark and even love the down. You learn to hold your life inside you and never let.
That is Idina Menzel live on Soundcheck and Tom Kitt live at our piano with the song You Learn to Live Without. It comes from the musical If Then, which is playing now at the Richard Rogers Theater. The If Then original cast recording is now out. But Idina and Tom, good to have the two of you here with us today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Idina, let's start with just a kind of a practical question. There is a full cast on If Then.
Yes.
But you're singing for like 75-80% of this show.
Is that true, Tom? I don't know. Tom wrote all the music. I think,
a lot.
I sing a lot.
So, you know, that's a real kind of athletic feat, you know?
Use that word. That's how I think of it.
Yeah.
Oh, I have a voice teacher I've had for many, many, many years, ever since college. And, you know, we found our way to kind of learn how to build endurance and pace myself, and I warm up all the time. And then the more I sing, as long as I'm singing in a healthy, technically healthy way, then actually the stronger I get, as long as I don't get sick.
Well, now that was going to be my next question. What happens if you get sick?
You make some bad sounds in front of a lot of people.
But there must be an understudy, right?
There's a wonderful understudy. Yeah. Her name's Jackie Burns. But, you know, we don't like her to go on too much. I'm just kidding. There's an understudy, but, you know, there's a huge responsibility when your name's above the title, which is this is the first time for me that that's actually happened. So it's really hard for me to not go on. I got sick one time, and it's just my dedication and my pride and my will, my just desire to do the show whenever and however I can sometimes
gets the best of you.
Yes, and then I get out there and I wish I didn't.
Well, now you're playing two versions of this character Elizabeth, mm-hmm. and you know she's got a decision to make. It seems like a very minor decision, but it's mm-hmm. sort of like, you know, the butterfly flapping its wings
exactly.
that causes a tornado in Oklahoma or whatever
yeah.
it is. So it's all the spin-offs of this. And she becomes Liz in one story.
Uh-huh. Her name's Elizabeth. And in one story, she feels more connected to Liz, the other Beth. And she's sort of, you know, I don't know. I think of her as one soul with two different experiences mm-hmm. that we're following and how the circumstances of her life affect who she becomes.
And does the music sort of, you know, parallel the different stories? I mean, Tom,
yes.
when you guys were writing the music, does Liz's music have maybe a different cast, a different sound from Beth's music?
Well, I did try to create two specific themes for the two tracks. When they start out, you hear them in the overture before the show begins. And since they're coming from the same person, they wanted to have a similarity to them. But I find one has a little more of a searching romantic quality to signify which character is going to meet the guy mm-hmm. early on. And another one is sort of a little more life choice and career quality to me. But, you know, it's really about the events in their life that shape the kinds of songs and the moods they're in.
But it's so multi-layered what he's done with the music. And it's probably for some people on a subconscious level, maybe for other musicians, they'd really hear it. But there's just so many layers there that help me as an actor as well. It's that sometimes there's not as much work as you think, because if I just sort of float on top of what he has, you know, he speaks to me, sort of tells me the core, what Beth is feeling in this, or Liz. And I offered to sing Beth as an operatic singer and Liz as a jazz singer, but we thought that was too on the nose.
Well, now that sort of gets to another interesting thing about If Then, which is, now, Tom, it's you and Brian Yorkey,
yes.
the lyricist, and you guys have won a Pulitzer Prize for doing Next to Normal. Mm-hmm. How early on was Adina involved in the kind of creation of this?
Adina was on board very early. We knew after Next to Normal that Brian and I wanted to do our next project with Michael Greif, and David Stone talked to us about doing our next show. And we were floating around different ideas. And when If Then came to David, David said, well, actually, Adina and I have been talking about doing something. And I think this might be something she would be interested in. And as soon as that came to us, we thought that would be a dream come true to work with her.
So that gives you the opportunity not just to write in a vacuum, but to know the major character, the major actor for whom you're writing.
Yes, it's very helpful. It's very daunting when you have a talent like Adina Menzel to do her justice, and it is. You want to write?
Snorted.
I know you did, and I
think we all heard that, Adina.
but you do. It's you want to really do justice to that gargantuan instrument, and certainly for me, I even have memories, pictures of me sitting at the piano, hearing her voice in my head as I was writing the first songs.
So Adina, it's another character that you were the original Maureen in Rent mm-hmm. and Elphaba in Wicked, and here you are creating this kind of dual character mm-hmm. here. I mean, is that something that you set out to do, or have you just gotten really, really lucky?
Both. Definitely both. I think Rent was my first professional job, and it was an original musical, and I was involved pretty early on, and I saw how wonderful a process and experience, what a wonderful process it is to stand by the piano with Jonathan Larson at the time, and I learned just how incredibly grateful an actor could be to stand there and sort of be invited into these artists' sanctuary, you know, and have them doing their creative thing. So I always knew what an honor it was to be a part of that. And then it happened again years later with Wicked. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten lucky, but also I try to seek out working with people on brand new material. It just takes a lot longer. You know, people say, why haven't you come back to Broadway in so long? These things take a while to really develop and, you know,
and you're there in the process of the creation of the songs and the story.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Know. I mean, they have their space. I'm not hanging over them or anything. But as soon as he has something he's excited about, he comes and we go to the piano and we try it out. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I think there's the chicken or the egg sometimes, you yeah. know, and that's what's so lovely about it.
Now, it is the role of Elizabeth, this kind of dual role. It's fairly emotional, you know. So you seem to be kind of emotionally invested in it.
Uh-huh.
Is it tough to do that night after night?
Yes. Yes. But you start to – I don't know if it's the creature of 8 shows a week or what it is, but you learn a way to protect yourself. And you learn a way to that your body feels it when the lights are on and the music starts. And you also learn that when you walk off, you can go call your son and laugh with your castmates about something funny that happened. And for me, I wouldn't be able to survive if I had to do that all day long and be entrenched in the character.
Yeah.
So, but at first it's not like that. At first you have to find those things. Then they start to click in because you do them every day.
Now, so we follow Liz and we follow Beth through their parallel but different life courses. And it all hinges on, you know, who she goes with. Does she go with this person, or does she go over there and listen to the guitarist, you know, follow the career, follow the music?
Yeah.
We, on Soundcheck, about a year ago, had the author Laurie Carson on, and she'd written a book called The Original 1982 about a woman who has the same choice to make. You know, does she have a kid, or does she follow a musical career? And it seems like, you know, especially for women, that this is often like a choice that somebody faces.
I've faced it. I continue to face it, you know. That's why when you talk about these dual character, I know that is what it seems, but it's for me, or for most women, I think it's just different parts of the spectrum that we're highlighting to tell a story about, you know. I mean, they're all me, they're all of us. And yes, I've struggled with putting off having a child, worried that it would distract me from my ambition and my career. And then I realized once I had a child how that enriched my life and me as an artist and as a woman. And it's constant, the balancing motherhood now with my performing and my career and the guilt that I'm constantly slaying myself with. And it's just – but it's wonderful to have a role, a show that I can at least go and assess those things and work through them on stage. I'm very lucky.
Now, the other thing is the moment of choice. You don't always know when that is.
Exactly,
you know, sometimes it takes a few years and you look back and say, oh, that's where.
If I would have picked up the phone, yeah.
So is there a moment in your career where, you know, looking back on it now, you say that was the moment where I made the decision that set me on this path?
I guess Rent is one of those moments for me, because Michael Greif is our director from MIFDEN, and he's the one that really discovered me 18 years ago, whenever it was. And I was also really I wanted to be a singer-songwriter rock star at the time, and I didn't think I wanted to go into theater, even though as a kid that's all I listened to. I just didn't know who I was and what to do with my voice and my artistic identity, you know. And but I went in anyway, and then I met him, and then here we are today, just continuing to work on these projects. And it's not just about the projects, it's about the support system and the family, and the, you know, the older you get, you realize it's more about the people you spend your time with, and who you pick to teach you and to challenge you. And so I'm just so glad that I made that decision to go in that day to that audition.
You ever wonder what would have happened if the decision had gone the other way, if you decided not to?
Yeah, you know, that's something that we think about a lot in the show is, if you didn't make that decision, would it still come back around? What is meant to be? Yeah. What is destined? What is all just chance? And some statistics, life statistics, you know, the probability of. And I believe deep in my heart, I'm not a very religious person, but I do feel that things, maybe it would take me a longer journey or I'd come back around. However, you know, you have to learn these lessons. You have to experience these things in your life to be prepared for the next door to open. And whichever way that works out, it would have some sense to it.
Idina Menzel and Tom Kidd here with me in the Soundcheck studio. The musical If Then is playing now at the Richard Rogers Theater. And Tom, without giving anything away, what Idina is just talking about, the idea that, you know, things will come around at some point, you know, that the universe will revolve if it's meant to and put you in a certain place, it does become part of the storyline of If Then, right?
Yeah, that was one of the central themes that Brian and I talked about when we first decided we were going to write the central question of, are you meant to meet the person of your dreams? Are you meant to meet the love of your life? And Brian, I think, hilariously says that from time to time, if it's a musical, the answer is yes.
Otherwise, you don't have much of a musical,
exactly.
Do you? All right. Brian Yorkey is the lyricist, and Tom Kidd, of course, wrote the music. So do you guys want to do another song for us?
Sure.
All right. So Tom's going to make his way back to the piano, and Idina Menzel to the microphone. The song is called Some Other Me, and, of course, you'll find it on the original cast recording of If Then, which which is out now. If Then is playing now at the Richard Rogers Theater. We'll hear both Idina Menzel and Tom Kitt in this song called Some Other Me, live on Soundcheck.
Somewhere there's a world where you and I are man and wife. We have a child or three, and it's just fine with me to love that life. And somewhere there's a world where from the first we never met, we never spoke or kissed. We don't know what we missed or don't know. But to Smith or Yale or Brown, I ended up in Boston or some small Alaska town to practice law or neuter cats or fish the Bering Sea. Those lives are lived somewhere by some other me. Some other me is homeless. Some other me is queen. Some other me has seen things that no other me. If I met her, I would ask her that one question we both fear, some other me. How do we end up here?
Somewhere there's a me who never loved that other you, who liked your fine, I guess, as buddies, more or less, and that would do. Somewhere there's a you who simply worshipped other me, and we were wild and hot, and all the things were not, and we were free. And somewhere I'm the president with plans that never fail, and somewhere I'm a rebel king, and somewhere I'm in jail. I didn't chase my glory days long after they were done. I found myself a woman or a man and had a son. Some other me is a rock star. Some other me still cool. Some other me does not feel like some tired old fool. And you and I are strangers, or we're lovers, or we're not. The other me's live with what they've got.
Look down each road left untaken.
Trace every turn and twist.
The lives that we just let go by.
The dreams we might have missed.
Now we're old enough to know that one road ends where one begins. The moment where the what might be turn into might have been. Somewhere there's a world where you and I can still be friends, not like we were, not yet. We forgive but don't forget. No happy ends, but
Some Other Me is the name of the song from the musical If Then, with lyrics by Brian Yorkey and music by Tom Kitt. Idina Menzel singing live here in the Soundcheck studio. Tom Kitt doing some singing, too.
Isn't he amazing?
He did pretty well. That's Anthony Rapp's part, right?
That is, yes.
So that's who sings it on the original cast recording, but Tom's singing it here in the studio. Not bad for a Tony and Pulitzer Prize-winning musician and pianist and composer. Now, the two of you and the rest of the crew on If Then had a somewhat unusual problem, and as problems go, this is a good one to have. This is like, where am I going to put all this beer? It's
right.
That, you know, with Idina now drawing in so many fans, Tom, especially mm-hmm. younger ones, you guys have written a very adult show here.
Ah, interesting mm-hmm. question.
So how do you, I mean, Idina, you look out in the audience and you see, you know, a row of 10-year-old girls and you're singing a song whose title could be reduced to WTF.
Yes.
How do you deal with that?
Well, they actually say the certain age. I forget what it is.
I think it's 12. I think we say 12 and up for the show.
Well, you say that, but...
No, but really, there are not many little girls in blue dresses sitting out in If Then.
It's a wonderful problem to have that so many people want to come see Adina and come see the show. I actually brought my 9-year-old to the invited dress because it's funny how when you're a parent, you find yourself clinging to your child for support much more than your child actually clings to you. And I wanted him there that night. And what he got, he got. I'm not saying bring 9-year-olds, but the show resonates. And I think we wrote it not knowing that Frozen was going to be what it was.
We also have found, not to denigrate the older people that come, but the younger people are very smart and with it, and they get a lot of stuff, and they enjoy the puzzle, putting the puzzle together of the show. Maybe because... I don't know why, but it's turned out
because
to not be as
young,
much.
Because they're young, because they're not beaten down by life.
It's also with all the technology today, the kind of puzzle pieces of the show, I think, are attractive to people whose minds are thinking that way and have had grown up with that kind of technology as well.
But it's not as much of a problem. Actually, when I do my concerts, my private concerts, that's when I worry more because, you know, people will come to bring their kids to hear Let It Go, and I'm 43 years old, and I've got stories to tell, you know, that aren't necessarily appropriate, and I don't know how to do it so that I'm respectful but also true to myself.
Right. So the fanzels, as they're known, your enormous army of fans, they come to these concerts as well?
Yeah, but the fanzels could be, you know, 30-year-old women, guys now, and you know, they're from Rent back
right,
then.
That's true.
So it depends on what generation you're talking about, and that's what I'm so proud of, and what I feel so grateful for is that each project has been in a decade, so that people come back, and as they have children, then they bring them. And
so what you're saying is there are now three generations.
Hopefully,
of
so that when I'm 70, I'll still have a musical someone will want to write for me.
I'll write that musical.
We're speaking with Adina Menzel and Tom Kitt, star and composer, respectively, of the Broadway musical If Then, playing now at the Richard Rodgers Theater. Adina, what kind of name is that, Adina? I-D-I-N-A. I've never seen
that. It's obviously a name that doesn't get pronounced very easily. No,
has not been heard on Oscar night all that often.
Not really, no. it's an Israeli name, a Hebrew name. It means gentle. I'm not Israeli. I'm Jewish.
Are you
and
gentle?
My mom, and I can be very gentle. Yeah, it depends who you ask, I guess. Yeah, and I was named after my great-grandmother, Ida. And my mom, in Jewish religion, when someone passes, you name after, use the first letter. And
right.
So, but we don't, my mother, my whole life said it's not Idina, it's Adina, a short I. But, you know, if anyone, everyone in Long Island that I grew up with calls me Idina. So if I hear someone call me on the street from behind, they say it like that, I know it's someone from high
school.
From school,
yeah. So how does a good Jewish girl from Long Island end up doing a Christmas album?
All the good Jews do Christmas albums.
That's true.
That's just a time-honored tradition.
True.
Yes, that's what I've told myself. Barbara did one.
Barry Manilow.
Yes, and Irving Berlin, right, and all these amazing writers. And so I told myself it's okay. I am going to have a little bit of... I told myself it's okay, and I'm enjoying making it. These are the most beautiful songs. The melodies are incredible. You know,
this is what people don't generally understand about Christmas albums is they're not made at Christmas time. They're made in the heat of the summer.
90-degree weather. Yeah.
So you're doing it now?
And a good Jewish girl from Long Island likes to make a Christmas tree. Now, it might not be that many colors. It might be all, you know, white lights with, you know, it's very color coordinated, and a Jewish American princess's Christmas tree. But I still do the tree in my house.
So you're in the midst of this project right now?
I am, yes. And I've had fake snow and snowflakes put into the studio so that I could, you know, really evoke the feeling. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But
I would have believed you. You're in this bright red shirt that looks like you just need the white beard for that.
I have to say, I'm really enjoying it. It's a lot of fun to do, and I'm lucky that I, you know, that someone wants to put it out for me this
mm-hmm.
year.
So that'll be later this year?
Yes.
Presumably around Christmas time.
You never know.
Idina Menzel, Tom Kitt, it has been a lot of fun having you guys here with us in the studio.
You.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm not one for fortunes, or wishing on a star. And I've studied all the stories and what our chances are. Then my heart starts beating faster, and it makes this disaster worse by far. Still here I go. Oh, here I go. Now I know all the motions, the steps to every dance, and I count cards at the table. I never bet on chance. I leave nothing to the gods. I know all the odds, and even so, still here I go.
If Then is playing now at the Richard Rogers Theater. By the way, you can watch video of Idina Menzel's performance here in our studio. And heck, why not share it with a friend? Just head over to soundcheck.org. Up next, singer-songwriter Michael Franti is the leader of the band Spearhead, but he's going to talk with us about why he thinks music belongs in the yoga classroom and about why he gave up smoking pot. That's next on Soundcheck.
Fire, 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 light up your lighter. Fire, 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 yeah. Tell me, President, tell me if you will. How many people does a smart bomb kill? How many of them do you think we got?
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. People who attend concerts by Michael Franti and his band Spearhead usually know what they're in for. Politically charged songs, extended jam sessions, you might get a hula hooper here and there. Little whiff of weed in the air. But this summer, Michael Franti fans have been encountering something new at his concerts. Yoga mats. Michael Franti's Soul Shine Tour is a combination yoga class rock concert, and he joins me here in the studio today to tell us about it. Michael, it's been a while. Welcome back to Soundcheck.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's been like 2008 or something like that. So.
And back then, our security was nonplussed in the building because you came into the building without shoes.
Yes.
And here you are without shoes again.
Well, I brought my flip-flops today and secretly took them off when I made it through the security gate.
So, you know, you're a guy who likes his body to be in touch with his environment.
Yeah.
Is that what got you into yoga in the first place?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I was traveling on tour and I was very feeling really broken down. You know, my back was sore from holding my guitar all the time and getting in and out of a tour bus and airplanes and bad restaurant food. And I walked into a yoga class on September 12th, 2001. So the day after September 11th.
Wow.
It was also a very stressful time for everyone in our country and around the world, really. And I went into this practice, and at the end of it, I felt better. Mm-hmm. I felt looser in my body, but more importantly, I felt a sense of ease and a sense of focus that I had never experienced from any other sort of physical activity or even meditation that I had practiced before. And so I kept going to classes each day, and I'd go to a different city and go to a different yoga school, and I've done that ever since, you know, for almost 13 years now on tour. And I started inviting people to our shows to practice at Soundcheck. And first it was 5 people, and then 15, and then 30. And then last year when we played Red Rocks in Colorado, we invited people to come early. We had 1,200 yogis show up. So we thought this year we would do that at every stop along the tour. So we've assembled some of my favorite yoga teachers who I've met along the way, and 4 killer bands. And there's an hour yoga class that's done with acoustic music that mm-hmm. I play through the whole class. And then the doors open for a big rock concert once everybody's loosened up.
That must be one hell of a mosh pit you got going there in the evening. So you guys are kind of jamming along.
Yeah, what
is
I do
is... completely improvised?
No, I sing a lot of my songs, and it's myself and Jay Bowman, who plays guitar in my mm-hmm. band, and I play a stomp box, which is like a drum I play with my foot. And so it's like being in class where you're listening to music, except I'm actually there.
Michael Franti is actually here with us on Soundcheck, the founder and leader of the band Spearhead. Their latest album's called All People, and he and the band are currently leading this Soulshine music and yoga tour. In addition to Michael being here in the Soundcheck studio, Nicole Newman has joined us as well. She's a yoga instructor and the founder of Yoga for the Arts, based here in New York. So, Nicole, Michael and his gang aside, it seems like there are lots of musicians who've found their way to yoga.
Absolutely. I have the pleasure, as a musician myself, conservatory-trained flutist, to work with professional and aspiring professional musicians to help prevent and rehabilitate injuries, as you know, being on tour is extremely strenuous on both the body and the mind.
Well, and Michael was talking, you know, years of holding the guitar. Mm-hmm. You know, the guitar is not like, for example, a clarinet, which, you know, you hold in front of you. The guitar is sort of weighted on, I guess the flute would be the same way,
yeah.
Right? It's sort of weighted to one part of your body as opposed to another.
Well, any asymmetrical instrument is going to pose its own set of challenges, but each instrument has a unique set of challenges. You know, we might think the clarinet or the oboe is an advantage, but they too have issues with tendons in the thumb, wrist tensions, elbow tension.
So yoga can help with that?
Yoga can help prevent these injuries from their onset and also help to rehabilitate them.
Oh.
Especially if they're caught in the early stages.
Did that work for you, Michael?
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of really basically atrophy in my back, you know. So in between my shoulder blades and my lower back, I just wasn't using those muscles, and I was sitting in chairs on planes and buses a lot, like most of us do when we go to work. And I used to have to go to a lot of massage and physical therapy and stuff to try to work stuff out of my body. But now that I take care of myself, I don't have to do that anymore. And I know where I need to stretch when I'm feeling it.
All right, now let me ask you both a kind of a question that struck all of us here at Soundcheck when we started thinking about, you know, this combination of music and yoga, which is, there are some, maybe I'm using the wrong term here, but there are some schools of yoga mm-hmm. where music is not considered to be a part of the practice. It's actually a distraction from the practice. So, you know, Michael, you talk about going to different school, a different class in every city. You must have
come up
again.
Yeah, I don't go to that
again.
School. No, but actually I have, you know, an Iyengar yoga and Ashtanga yoga, which are sort of the two main threads that have brought yoga to America. There's no music in either of them. In Ashtanga, there's a bit of singing that people do at the start of the practice and at the end of the practice sometimes. But apart from that, it's yoga is really about putting ourselves into challenging positions and then learning to breathe through them and learning to quiet our mind while our mind is saying, "I want to get out of this. It's too difficult," and I'm too, you know. We learn to quiet our mind in this. So there's a lot of people who feel that you can do that better without the distraction of music. I believe that music and yoga are both accessing the windows that open the soul. And so our mind gets really taxed. Our body becomes really tired. And it's our soul in those moments that opens up and go, you know what? You can go a little bit further. You can love a little bit more. You can connect a little more deeply. And music, you know, you might hear just the first opening chords of, you know, Miles Davis's My Funny Valentine without any words. It'll make you cry, you know. And the same thing is true with yoga. You go deeply into your hips and you breathe into it. And you might access some part of your some memory that has happened or some experience that's gone into your life that you go, wow, and you let it go, and the same thing happens. And so I feel that the two really can complement each other.
What about you, Nicole?
Well, I think there's an indelible bond between music and yoga without question, and I'm an advocate for whatever gets people to the mat, and practicing yoga That's key.
I mean, if you're doing yoga specifically with musicians, mm-hmm. is there music in the studio while you're working with them?
I'm not playing music as we're working. Most of the time I'm delivering a workshop. Sometimes it's to a 120-person orchestra. But often I also have one-on-one sessions. Mm. So the music really takes place where I have a musician play for me so I can observe any tension-holding patterns, and that helps me to customize a sequence based on their personal needs. But I've definitely participated in classes where there's music, and it can be a really beautiful experience.
Soundcheck listeners, if you practice yoga, how do you feel about combining music and yoga? Do you like it? Do you find it distracting? You can leave us a comment at soundcheck.org. Michael Franti is here with us, the founder and leader of the band Spearhead. Their current tour is the Soul Shine Music and Yoga Tour. Nicole Newman, also with us on Soundcheck, is the founder of Yoga for the Arts, based here in New York City. So, Michael, especially given the way this current tour works, you've got Spearhead fans showing up. They're doing yoga. You're playing along, and as you said before, you know, this is not like the opening instrumental of My Funny Valentine. This is you singing in English songs that, and many of your songs have a kind of social or socio-political context to them. Mm-hmm. And I could clearly imagine some of these people on the mat going, oh, I like this song. Oh, this is the song where he's really like digging into that death penalty thing. You know, it's like, I can see how that could be. You know, you could be trying to serve two masters at the same time.
Well, what we do is, I usually start off the class just by playing a song for everybody to get up and jump around and dance to. And then we bring everybody down into the mats and set an intention, and then teachers take over. And I play a lot of acoustic music, and then we sort of riff off each other with the teacher, and they leave space for me to sing a little bit, and people get up and jump around and dance. And we do partner yoga and acro yoga. And we do stuff with everybody in a circle. So it's not your, you know.
It's not a class.
It's not your mom's yoga class. You know? it's playtime. But the reason that we do it that way is that we do have a lot of people who are there for the first time. And our theme for the tour is music and yoga for all. And I think there's this sort of misconception about yoga that you have to be skinny, you have to be wearing Lululemon pants, you have to be, you have to sit cross-legged for an hour and hum some mantra, you know. And yoga is really for everybody and for all, you know, shapes and sizes and experiences. Yeah. And so we try to make it be something that is fun and challenging for people who have been on the mat, but accessible for people who are there for the first time.
Now, Michael, can you do the cross-legged, the lotus position?
You know what? I've been practicing yoga for 13 years, and I cannot get myself into lotus.
I'm so glad to hear that, because yeah. I can't conceive of how
my hips
can do that.
Yeah, my hips are very, very tight when I started. But, you know, some people walk into a yoga room and they're from day one, they can do that, but they can't do other things. And that's the thing about yoga, is that we all come in with our own bodies and our own experiences. And it's not where you think you should be. It's just being with where you are at the moment and seeing if you can go beyond your personal horizons.
Mm-hmm. And Nicole, I mean, the musicians who come to you, first of all, is it hard to get musicians to kind of look in this direction to help with performance problems, performance anxiety problems, that sort of stuff?
I think it's becoming easier and easier. People are realizing, administrators of music schools and music programs are realizing that so many musicians are incurring injuries, and often it's been swept under the carpet for fear of not getting a job or missing an opportunity, having to change their practice.
But schools have had like Alexander technique and stuff.
Absolutely. But it's, again, it wasn't mandatory for many years. It was an elective. Now it's becoming a course that musicians need to take. And I find that all of these different practices, people become very committed to their practice. This is the way. But I feel we're all marching up the same mountain. Mm. So it's just a different route there. Many musicians are afraid, oh, I can't touch my toes. I'm not flexible. And that's really not the purpose. Iyengar says if you can breathe, you can do yoga. And it's really about finding those, as Iyengar would say, the quote-unquote black holes of the body and bringing life to those spots that might have been dormant for some time.
You know, on our tour, we've got the other, you know, my band and the three other bands who are out. And most of the artists haven't practiced before. And it's been really amazing to see people showing up for the mat every day who have never practiced before. And they're having their, you know, their mind just totally turned around about what yoga is and what it is for their own experience. Because being a musician is really, it's being an athlete. You're using your body, you're using your muscles, you're using your breath, you're using your joints, and you're doing, like you said, the repetitive movements that occur. And the muscle memory that's required is using this a lot of the same muscles and the same groups of muscles all the time.
As the classical pianist Leon Fleischer refers to musicians, small muscle athletes.
Yeah, exactly.
But learning to recruit the larger muscles to really help the smaller muscles, that's a major thing. Because just using the smaller muscles and not realizing how they connect to the whole can also lead to some problems down the road.
Well, now, Nicole, you're a flutist. And Michael, in addition to being an instrumentalist, you're obviously a singer as well. So you both deal with breath. So that seems to be, I am not a yoga practitioner.
But you're a human and you breathe.
I do appreciate the benefits of breathing. It definitely beats the alternative. But so, you know, breath seems to be kind of at the core of all these different schools of yoga. Is that right?
You know, that's the first thing we really connect with when we start our practices is the breath and learning to connect your breath to your movement.
And Nicole, for you?
Yeah, I mean, the breath serves as a conduit for our creativity, our curiosity to enhance our creativity, to elicit the relaxation response when performance anxiety is high. And that was another thing, relying on beta blockers to decrease, even though it's not like a Xanax for decreasing anxiety, but a muscle relaxant. They're very popular, and many musicians are trying to move away from that. Because if you really want to have a lifelong career as a musician, it's better to really take ownership of your own health versus relying on this external, really unsustainable.
So you don't want to be on beta blockers for as long as you're out there playing.
You don't ever want to be on beta blockers. Yeah. You really don't ever want to be on that.
You know, when I first started practicing, I smoked lots of pot. Before. Mm-hmm. And I would smoke from 11 in the morning till whenever I had to sleep. And I would get on the yoga mat in the morning and I get into down dog, which is an inversion. So your head is facing down and it's below your heart and your blood goes to your head. And I would just feel like hungover basically. And I'd feel cloudy and foggy. And so I'd say to myself, you know, I'm not going to smoke tonight because I don't want to feel cloudy in yoga tomorrow. And then you'd be like, well, I'm not going to smoke in the afternoon. And today I'm just going to skip it. And eventually I unintentionally weaned myself from like probably 12 years of pot addiction just by wanting to be on the mat more than I wanted to feel cruddy all the time. And that in itself really changed my life, but also you go through a great yoga class and it's, you know, 75, 90 minutes of really working hard and focusing and sweating, and you get off the mat and the last thing you want to do is like put a Diet Pepsi in you. You want to, you know, you want like something clean. You want fresh water. You want juice. You want to start eating better. And you know, I was somebody who would do a show and then we'd go to Denny's and we'd slam like all kinds of Denny's food and then drink soda all day long. And it wasn't like an intentional thing, but I really cleaned up my my nutrition, because you just start thinking of what are ways that, like you said, as a musician that I can do this. I'm 48 now, and I can do things with my body that I couldn't do when I was 35 or even 28.
It surreptitiously changes you. I mean, I didn't go into yoga saying, "Oh, I'm looking to calm down and, you know, have this spiritual connection." I went there because I had physical injury. And I was told by a physical therapist and a massage therapist and acupuncturist, oh, you should really do yoga. You should really do yoga. And when I first started, I really didn't like it. I thought, what a bunch of weirdos. I really did. I thought, this is just bizarre. I don't understand. But I bought a 10-pack, and I was too cheap to toss it away. So I was encouraged, keep going. And I really fell in love with it. And it's kind of like sports. You know, you could hate golf, but you love soccer. Mm-hmm. And there's a practice for everyone.
I hate golf and love soccer.
Exactly. So there you go. So
are you saying yoga is for me?
No, I'm saying yoga. There's so many different styles. So, and there's so many different ways of accessing it. So if you go to one class and it, you know, maybe it's too restorative or too slow paced for you at that time. Yeah. Maybe you need something more energized. So it really depends.
Well, the Soul Shine Music and Yoga Tour is on the road right now. Michael Franti and the band Spearhead leading that tour. Their latest album is called All People. Nicole Newman's been with us as well, yoga instructor and founder of Yoga for the Arts based here in New York. And Michael, Nicole, this is fascinating stuff. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They all tell me that there's something strange. I don't want to meet nobody new. All I wanna do is be with you. Life sounds like I'm alive, I'm alive, I'm alive.
Up next, we want your help curating a soundcheck series that, if it succeeds, will help you fake your way through your next conversation about music. That's next. I'm John Schaefer. Here in the Soundcheck office, we're working on an upcoming series designed to make you a more impressive conversation partner at cocktail parties and around the water cooler. It's called How to Be Smarter About... ... And we need your help filling in those dots. Now, when it comes to music, what do you want to be smarter about? Maybe you want to know more about bebop, or how to fake your way through a conversation about hip-hop. Maybe you want to better understand who or what Captain Beefheart is or was. So what would you like to be smarter about? Just to get you thinking, here are some suggestions we've received so far. Shaloub emailed us one word, counterpoint. That's actually a very good idea, Shaloub. I think we'll take you up on that. Our listener Jonah wants to be smarter about something totally different, or maybe not. Jonah writes, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. There is literally no other catalog of music that is so intimidating in its breadth and depth. I need more access points and entryways, more route markers along the long and winding road that is Zappa's life and music.
Who are the brain police?
So, when it comes to music, what do you want to be smarter about? Send us an email, soundcheck@wnyc.org, or leave us a voicemail, 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. The singer Aaron Neville is set to do a residency this month at City Winery here in New York, starting on August 17th. So before we go tonight, let's listen back to Aaron's appearance on Soundcheck last year, just after he'd released an album of doo-wop songs. Performing a tune called Ting-a-Ling, originally recorded by the Clovers back in 1952, here's Aaron Neville and his band and the song as they played it live on Soundcheck.
Mr. Madison, are you blowing your top? Well, I'm just a poor young boy, and these girls about to drive me wild. Well, I'm just a poor young boy, and these girls about to drive me wild. Well, I'm just a poor young boy, and these girls about to drive me wild. The way they rock and roll and call me angel child. The way they laugh, the way they sing, it makes my heart go tingling. The way they laugh, the way they sing, it makes my heart go tingling. The way they laugh, singing, it makes my heart go tingling. Ting-a-ling, 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 ting-a-ling. Wah-doo, wah-doo. Bo-doo-doo-doo-doo, bo-doo-doo-doo, 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 bo-doo-doo-doo.
That's Aaron Neville and his band in the Soundcheck studio last year with their version of Ting-a-ling, made famous by the Clovers more than half a century ago. You can hear a version of that song on Aaron Neville's 2013 album, My True Story. Tomorrow on the show, Buffalo radio stations are banning songs by Bon Jovi. We'll look at a bid to buy the NFL's Buffalo Bills put together by the rocker John Bon Jovi. Plus, English singer-songwriter David Gray is best known for his moody hit song Babylon. He'll join us to play songs from a new album called Mutineers tomorrow in the studio. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.